Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, February 9th. Feeling of community, ease of life make Midland home. Younger Midlanders return because of factors not found in larger communities. The story was written by Ben Schaffer. Catherine Hansen, Kennedy Kaufman, and Maddie Cobb grew up in Midland and attended local schools. Following their college graduation, they returned. Go back 20 to 25 years, and the idea of Midlanders returning after college was a goal of many vision meetings and Chamber of Commerce initiatives. But following an oil industry renaissance and shale revolution, more jobs made Midland more attractive to younger people who previously couldn't wait to leave. Indeed, the three young professional women were among those who returned, even after stints in larger communities. And they are part of a legion of younger Midlanders who have lowered the median age to 31 or 32. Recently, they stopped by the Reporter Telegram to provide their take on Midland and two main reasons they are happy with their decisions to come home: the community feel and ease of life. Catherine Hansen graduated from Midland High School in 2012 and then attended the University of Texas at Austin. She now works as a land technician for Permian Resources. She said that although Midland may lack some quality of life amenities found in large Texas metropolitan areas, it's easy to gather with friends and share downtime. Quote, "It's kind of fun to just have a Wednesday where you can drive 10 minutes, no traffic, to a friend's house and have dinner," Hansen said. "You just kind of have that community relationship here that I don't think is as attainable in other big cities," end quote. Kennedy Kaufman, a Midland High graduate in 2014, is a manager of physician recruitment at Midland Memorial Hospital. She had lived in Dallas briefly following her graduation from Texas A&M University. A positive distinction between Dallas and Midland is the short work commute or other convenient features that make it easy to socialize after a workday or be with friends. She also talked about being the midst of millions and still really not knowing anyone, something that is not a problem on her return to Midland. Maddie Cobb, a Midland Christian High School and Texas Tech graduate, works in accounting at Whitley Penn. Cobb said she lived in Austin, where she found it difficult for a younger person to get involved in nonprofits. That is not the case, she said, in Midland, where she is a co-chair with the American Cancer Society's Cattle Baron's Ball. In Midland, the ease of life and community allows for young Midlanders to make a difference, she said. All three women are involved with nonprofit organizations in Midland. Opportunities, they all said, are prevalent here compared to larger communities. They all talked about the opportunity to fit into their community, whether socially, philanthropically, or professionally. Being involved in Midland is more attractive than being in other bigger cities with long, cluttered commutes and inaccessible, expensive parking. Hansen is involved with Cattle Baron's Ball, Junior League, and Young Professionals in Energy, where she serves as director. Kaufman, who once worked with Make-A-Wish, is also involved with Cattle Baron's Ball. She also currently sells Midland every day as a recruiter of physicians. Kaufman said when she speaks to doctors, she tells them about that ease of life as well as the quality of Midlanders. Quote, "One of the things is like, no, we don't have new restaurants every day, But the people in larger cities go to the same 5 restaurants anyways, she said. I don't know what's so different about me living here and you living in Dallas. You have your favorite places, and I have my favorite. It's just I don't have that many to choose from, end quote. Kaufman added that her experience in Dallas lacked a sense of strong community, and she craved a smaller pond of familiar, friendly faces. Hansen said Midland-based Permian Resources has been home to employees who relocated from North Texas to Midland. After a few years in the tall city, those employees, she explained, said they couldn't imagine leaving the area to move back to Dallas. They cited the people and community as their reason to stay. The 3 women said younger Midlanders, specifically those without children, have the ability to leave Midland on a weekend anyway, so they can enjoy being home and putting Midland in the rearview mirror if an entertainment option comes up. But Midland's advantage is what happens when those younger Midlanders return. Quote, in my specific circle, if you will, people are wanting to stay who were hesitant to come here in the first place, and that's solely based on community, Hansen said. Bush Family Home, a Texas Historical Commission site. The Bush Family Home, home to a political family that produced 2 presidents and governors for some of the largest U.S. states, is now a Texas Historical Commission state historic site. Formerly known as the George W. Bush Childhood Home, the home opened as a museum in 2006 after a ribbon cutting attended by former President George H.W. Bush and First Ladies Barbara Bush and Laura Bush. The home is known for its Third Thursday reading programs, which allows children to hear stories and take home a free book. Quote, we are thrilled to include the Bush Family Home as one of 36 state historic sites that will highlight the significance of the Bush family, not just to Texas history, but to that of the nation and world, said Joseph Bell, THC Deputy Executive Director. Quote, it is a unique opportunity to provide visitors a snapshot of home life in the 1950s and 60s. End quote. The Bush Family Home, built in 1940, is listed in the National Register of Historic Places as the residence of an exceptional political family who shaped state and national politics in the late 20th and early 21st centuries. The Bush Family Home was accepted as a Texas State Historic Site at the April 28, 2022 meeting of the THC, making it the 36th state historic site in the agency's portfolio of key Texas historic sites that includes the San Jacinto Battleground and Monument in La Porte, the National Museum of the Pacific War in Fredericksburg, and the Port Isabel Lighthouse in Port Isabel. The existing board of the Bush Family Home will transition to the newly created Bush Family Home Foundation. Interim Director Jacqueline Wolf was named the Foundation Board Director. Quote, we are so excited about the future of the home with the Texas Historical Commission, Wolf said. We look forward working with them to create a place for people to enjoy. End quote. The Bush Family Home State Historic Site is located at 1412 West Ohio Street. New hours for the home are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., 2 to 5 p.m. Sunday, 2 p.m. to 5 p.m., open by appointment only on Tuesday and Wednesday, and closed on Mondays. Go online at visitbushfamilyhome.com. Menus, activities for Valentine's Day. The story was written by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Cowboy Prime at 200 Spring Park Drive, Suite 210. As of now, Cowboy Prime is no longer taking reservations for Valentine's Day. Although walk-ins are welcome, plan accordingly and make sure to have a second local option. Hoop and Barrel, 3211 West Wadley Avenue, Suite 21. A new tapas menu and Valentine's Day cocktails will be in full effect on the Day of Love. Drinks include the Love Buzz, Vanilla Vodka, Chambord, Fresh Raspberries and Simple, The Feeling This, Tequila, House Dragon Fruit Syrup, Lime Juice and Tingling Rim, The Ain't Talking About Love, Deep Eddie's Grapefruit Vodka, and Prosecco, and the Chocolate Cherry Bomb Shot, Mozart Chocolate Liqueur, and Ginger 9 Sour Cherry Liqueur. To check out new tapas, visit www.hoopandbarrel21.com. Midland Meat Company, 2600 Loma Drive. Heart-shaped ribeye and a wide selection of meats are available for purchase from the locally sourced crew. To get an idea of pricing and availability, visit www.midlandmeatco.com or call 432-262-4644. Pi Social, 203 West Wall Street. Along with their community favorite Make It Your Way pizzas, Pi Social will be hosting Al Haney, a serenading saxophone player, from 7 to 9 p.m. Guests will also have the option to request Haney come to their individual table. Reservations are highly encouraged. Call 432-247-1711. Tall City Meat Market, 2909 North Big Spring Street. Back for round three, the highly sought-after heart-shaped ribeye steaks have hit the market with 475 orders already placed. Other meat options include Wagyu ribeye, $185, strip, $175, and fillets, $200. Heart-shaped charcuterie boards packed with meats, cheeses, and fruits. Call 432-218-7514 to reserve your steaks. Texas Sun Winery, 3415 North Loop 250, Suite 305. Partnering with Chef Kim from Indulgence Catering, Texas Sun Winery will host a five-course dinner and wine pairing from 7 to 10 p.m. Dinner features a patron's choice of two entrees, ribeye or chicken, and two desserts, souffle or creme brulee. Live tunes will be provided by husband and wife duo Eric and Emily Baker, and the $210 ticket can be purchased at https://bit.ly/3JO8OQL. Note, only one ticket per couple. Venezia Restaurant, 2101 West Wadley Avenue, Suite 20. To accompany live music from Bo Certucci, Venezia's classics such as the seafood platter, $200 to $300, tenderloin brulees, $56, pin Mediterranean, $17, original Venezia rum cake, and more will be available for purchase. The staff will also be taking requests ahead of reservations, wine already on table, etc., for guests looking to add a special touch to the evening. To book, call 432-687-0900.
Review. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory Exceeds Expectations by Morgan Taylor Thomas. As the 2023 season opener, my expectations floated high for Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Naturally, a perfectly selected cast and genius line delivery made the production truly one of the most entertaining shows I've seen at MCT to date. Sometimes shows with a large cast age range can lack chemistry. However, the Tall City stage crew perfectly combined young with not as young, creating a balance between rookies and veterans and portraying accurate parental-child relationships throughout for the musical. Cooper Green encompassed Charlie Bucket's passive demeanor while Logan Bredemus hit Mike TV's angst on the head. Palin Arthur glittered in Veruca Salt's spoiled personality. Jesslyn Hudson sassed her way through the show as stubborn gum chewer Violet Beauregard. And Asher Jackson boastfully defined what it is to be the bold, food-loving August Gloop. Robert Reed ran with Willy Wonka's quirkiness, making it his own through wonderfully belted notes and intricately long lyrics. Other standouts include Daryl Berry as Grandpa Joe, Hiram Flores as Mr. Salt, and Carrie Kirkpatrick as Mrs. Bucket. Crowd favorite moments included any Oompa Loompa number and adult-friendly jokes too complex for young minds to understand, but still immature enough that when I chuckled, I couldn't help but feel like a kid. Overall, whether the candy-themed Smirnoff and pink lemonade drink special had anything to do with it or not, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory highlights the talent found in every corner of our community. Extensive choreography and fancy LED wall lighting aside, to miss this local creation would be a mistake. Without people like the acting members of MCT, Midland would be missing a huge piece of what makes this West Texas oil town puzzle unique. Showings for Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, February 10th and 11th, 17th through 19th, March 24th and 25th, February 24th and 25th, and March 3rd and 4th. Tickets can be bought at www.mctmidland.org. The Golden Ticket Experience with Susie's South 40 Confections will have one more gathering February 18th. More information and tickets can also be found at www.mctmidland.org. Three Things Happening in Midland, February 10th through 12th, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Spookify Your Valentines. The only thing Halloween and Valentine's Day have in common is the amount of chocolate people eat. However, since these are my favorite holidays, I'm all about combining the two, and who better to make that happen than Midland Trail of Horrors? For the first time ever, The Haunted Scene will host My Bloody Valentine's Date Night, composed of a walkable maze of a house full of terrifying love. Tickets can be bought for singles, $20, or couples, $35, at https://bit.ly/3HIYXIV. A ticket purchase guarantees entry, whereas walk-ups do not. For more information, visit https://bit.ly/3JEAQ1J. Friday and Saturday, 6:30 to 8 p.m. or 8:30 to 10 p.m. at 3112 South County Road, 1197. Complete your West Texas look. Nothing says Lone Star State quite like a wide-brimmed hat, and lately, customizations, such as branded initials and shapes, have swept the industry. The Pink Pug Shop will host a hat bar loaded with band designs, feathers, and other accessories. Guests can purchase a hat on site or bring their own. Burns will be done by War Horse Design Company. https://bit.ly/3DUUKPH. Snacks and refreshments will be served, and good times are sure to be had. No appointments necessary. Saturday, noon to 5 p.m. at 4300 Midland Drive, Suite 109. Relive the days of hardcore rock. Motley Crue, tribute band for 80s bad boys, Motley Crue, takes the Angry Armadillo stage for a two-hour production of classic heavy metal, bad to the bone, incurable, head-banging tunes. Motley Crue travels all over the state, showing off its dedicated memorial to the original crew, full dress and all. Looking for concert outfit inspo? Visit the band's Facebook page, www.facebook.com/MotleyCrueTribute/, to see how other crew heads come to party. Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m. at 3704 West Wall.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, February 9th. Rosario Rosa Gonzalez George, age 66, of Stanton, passed away on Saturday, February 4th in Midland, surrounded by her family. The family will receive friends from 4 p.m. until 6 p.m. Friday, February 10th, at Gilbreth Funeral Home. Rosary service will be at 7 p.m. Friday, February 10th, at Gilbreth Funeral Home. Graveside services will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, February 11th, at Evergreen Cemetery. Rosa was born in Mexico on February 26, 1956. She attended Aladdin Beauty School and owned and operated Stanton Beauty Shop. She is preceded in death by her parents, Bruno and Piedad Gonzalez, her spouse, Melvin George, brothers, Alfonso Reyes and Victor Gonzalez, and stepsister, Juana Gonzalez. She is survived by her son, Adrian George of Pleasanton, Texas, daughter Zena Perales of San Antonio, sisters Herminia Gonzalez of Stanton, Eva Williams of Helena, Alabama, Leticia Madrid of Odessa, Macrina Gonzalez of McAllen, Texas, stepsisters Maria Martinez of Grand Prairie, Texas, Ignacia Gonzalez of Tampico, Mexico, stepbrothers Joe R. Gonzalez of Stanton, Jose Concepcion Gonzalez of San Antonio, numerous cousins, nieces, and nephews. Arrangements are under the direction of Gilbreth Funeral Home of Stanton. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Ernestina Ramirez, age 84, of Midland, passed away on Monday, February 6th. Viewing will be Thursday, February 9th, from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass is set for Friday, February 10th, at 2 p.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Rest Haven. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit the website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Lanelle Joy Honeyman, age 71, of Midland, passed away February 7th. Memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, February 13th, at First Presbyterian Church in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Sterling Michael Jameson Jr. of Midland passed away Sunday, February 5th. Viewing will be Friday, February 10th, from 1 p.m. to 8 p.m., with a visitation from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday evening at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. A celebration of life for Sterling Jameson will be Saturday, February 11th at 2 p.m. at Mount Calvary Missionary Baptist Church at 303 East Shandon Avenue. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit the website at LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, February 9th, 2023. Library ready to bridge digital divide. Ector County Library officials found out around Christmas it was in line for a more than $540,000 present. However, the library needed to wait nearly 2 months later before sharing this present with its patrons. The Ector County Library is hoping to start unveiling those presents, which include 200 iPads, 200 Samsung tablets, 200 Chromebooks, and 400 hotspots with 1 year of service from T-Mobile during its Valentine's Day event next week. The event is scheduled from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. February 14th at the Ector County Library, located at 321 West 5th Street. Marks said there will be a press conference scheduled for 2 p.m. during that event. He also said those devices are much needed in the community. Our goal is to bridge the digital divide and help people bridge the digital gap that's in our county, Marks said. Our goal is to fill the gap for our residents and people of all ages, especially those who might be economically disadvantaged. The 1,000 devices were paid for by a third round of emergency connectivity funding. The grant from the FCC totals $548,100. James Denny, the IT administrator for the Ector County Library, said he hopes to start checking out devices during the Valentine's Day event. He said the devices will be on a first-come, first-served basis. He said patrons will check out the devices from the front desk clerk. Denny also explained devices can be checked out for in-house or out-of-house usage. According to the device checkout agreement, the devices can only be checked out by an adult with a library card in good standing, which means no fines and overdue books. Denny also explained all iPads, tablets, and Chromebooks will be filtered in accordance with Children's Internet Protection Act that will safeguard against adult websites. Outside of that, when a patron checks out one of the devices, they are free to do whatever they want with it, Denny said. Once it is returned, we wipe the device back to a clean slate. Whether it's in-house or out-of-house usage, patrons will need to fill out a device checkout agreement. The library will ask for credit card or debit card information in the out-of-house waiver. The out-of-house waiver will allow a patron to check out one hotspot and two other devices. The devices can be checked out for 2 weeks with one renewal, so the devices can be checked out for a total of a month. It's our assurance, and we think that it's fair, Mark said about credit or debit card information required for out-of-house checkouts. Mark said with the addition of the 1,000 devices, it can help grow the library's portfolio. Marks also wanted to thank Alex Montanez, Vanessa Krunick, and their respective teams from T-Mobile. This makes us proud to be able to offer this, he said. We call this the Library of Things, to have different things in our arsenal besides books, movies, magazines, and newspapers. Hard work pays off. OHS Mariachis heading for state. For the seventh time, the Odessa High School Mariachis will compete at the state level. The competition is set for February 24th and 25th at the Seguin High School for the Performing Arts. Director Jeremy Hernandez said they will be competing against schools across the state more for high scores than anything else. 18 musicians are going. Really, what we're aiming for is overall ones. We have three judges, and the goal is to get a one from each judge. We achieved that in 2021. That was the last time we achieved that. Last year, we didn't advance to state, Hernandez said. This year, they scored overall ones at the region contest in El Paso. I'm looking forward to the contest. It's a new group, a fresh group. We've got quite a few students here that have not played the varsity level, so they've had really formidable minds so that we can work with that and shape the sound that we want to create for the ensemble and create it to success, Hernandez said. He added that it's hard to predict how the group will do. It's always difficult to make a good guess. You just don't know. There are just so many things that could happen either way, good or bad. The one thing that we can focus on is, are we delivering technique that judges would like to hear in our performances? I find that it's just better to stick with that mentality of, are our techniques there, and is the judge going to be pleased with what we are doing, Hernandez said. They have also stayed away from whether their sound is a one in any given practice as they have done in previous years. This year, I think to prove where our focus has been, those questions haven't come up at all, Hernandez said. He added that one of the things he likes about this year's group is that they are holding each other accountable. As we're practicing, if there's something missing from one student or the other, they're taking time to address it within each other. If there's something that they still need my help with, they call me over. I like that they're holding themselves accountable. They're teaching each other, they're working with each other, cooperating with each other, collaborating with each other. I step in if there's a problem that they've stumbled upon that they can't figure their way out of, Hernandez said. Abraham Flores, Victoria Rivera, Carmen Robles, and Sienna Carrasco are all veteran mariachi musicians, having played since they were in middle school or younger. They are all familiar with mariachi music and listen to it even outside of school. The group has been practicing every day, and around this time of year they practice after school. Flores, a junior, plays a guitarón and has been in mariachis since he was in sixth grade. He said he thinks going to state will be an amazing experience. I've personally never gone to state, but I'm hoping it will be a good experience, Flores said. He feels excited and ready to go and says they have a good chance to win. Riviera, a senior, has been in mariachi since eighth grade and plays the violin. She said mariachi music has always been a part of her life. I'm really proud of our group because I feel like it took a lot of teamwork to be able to get where we are and to make it to state, Riviera said. As long as we work together as a team, I think we'll do fine, she added. Riviera said she is thrilled about going to Seguin. It's something that we've been working toward the whole year. It's the goal to make it to state. I'm super excited and I can't wait, she added. Robles, a junior, plays guitar and has been in mariachi for 6 years. I'm really glad we made it. I'm glad that the kids who couldn't make it last year are going to have the opportunity to go this year, especially the seniors. It took a lot of hard work, but I'm really proud of everybody for putting in the hard work and doing their best, Robles added. She said the group should do pretty well. Regardless of what we get, I'll be really proud of everybody, because I know everybody in this group really tries hard, Robles said. Carrasco has been in mariachi since 7th grade. She plays the violin and sings. She's glad the group will be going to state this year. I feel like we definitely deserve it, especially knowing and being part of all the work that we've had to put in this entire year. Like Carmen said, it should be extremely rewarding to those that were part of the varsity group last year and didn't get to advance to state, Carrasco said. As for how they'll do, she said there's almost a feeling of uncertainty of how they're going to perform. But there's also the light of hope in the back of my mind that is rooting for us to just keep going, beat everyone else, and get what we deserve, Carrasco said. Father files lawsuit following son's death. The father of a 24-year-old Louisiana man who was struck and killed by a car near the Synergy Theater on Highway 191 last summer has filed a wrongful death lawsuit against the driver, but Odessa police have determined the young man committed suicide. According to OPD, Tristan John Dugas was crossing Highway 191 around 10 p.m. August 13, 2022, when a westbound Honda Civic struck him in the 8200 block. Dugas died at the scene. On Monday, Dugas's father, Keith Dugas, of Pearl River County, Mississippi, filed a lawsuit in Ector County District Court against John Doe, the driver of the Honda. The lawsuit alleges the driver failed to pay requisite attention, failed to control his speed, and failed to take proper evasive action. In response to a Texas Public Information Act request, OPD released a heavily redacted report about the incident, but it does indicate Dugas's death was determined to be a suicide. Before releasing the report, the city of Odessa sought the opinion of the Texas Attorney General's office, which determined the report could be redacted because it is a closed case that did not result in a conviction or deferred adjudication. Keith Dugas's attorney, Nolan McConville of Dallas, said OPD has also declined to release the names of the driver of the vehicle or the witnesses to his law firm or his client, so they've not been able to investigate the death on their own. However, there is no evidence Tristan Dugas had exhibited suicidal behavior prior to the night of his death, nor was a note found, McConville said. McConville said a finding of suicide is quite subjective, and the lack of cooperation from the police department gave them no recourse other than the lawsuit. Quick Hits, Champions for Children. Harmony Home Children's Advocacy Center has scheduled the 2023 Champions for Children Conference at 7 a.m. today and Friday at the MCM Grande Hotel and Fun Dome, 6201 I-20 Business Loop East. The Champions for Children Conference is focusing on educating the community and professionals on furthering child abuse prevention efforts. Tickets are $100. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit tinyurl.com/MWBTY9B3. Free tax assistance. The Ector County Northside Senior Center, 1225 Adams Avenue, has scheduled free tax assistance for seniors from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Tuesdays and Thursdays through April 11th. Appointment is required. For more information or to make an appointment, call 432-337-5281. Bilingual Storytime, the Ector County Library Children's Department, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled a bilingual Valentine's Day Storytime event at 10 a.m. today. Visit tinyurl.com/YMA79MM3. Video Screening Part 1. The Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4919 East University Boulevard, has scheduled a PBS video screening of Part 1 of Making Black America Through the Grapevine from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. today. Visit tinyurl.com/4JKS292B. Cinema Under the Stars, Beauty and the Beast. The Arts Council of Midland has scheduled a free screening of Disney's Beauty and the Beast today at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North FM 1788 Midland. The doors will open and food trucks will be available at 5:30 p.m. and the event will start at 7 p.m. Visit tinyurl.com/2AFUPCP5. Mudbug. Meals on Wheels has scheduled the 23rd annual Mudbug from 5:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. April 11th at the Ector County Coliseum, 4201 Andrews Highway. There will be all-you-can-eat fried catfish, peel-and-eat shrimp, hush puppies, and crawfish. Tickets start at $50 per person. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit mowodessa.com/mudbug or tinyurl.com/mse63aje. Mother-Son Dance. Odessa Parks and Recreation has scheduled a Mother-Son Dance from 5:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. May 13th at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Convention Center, 305 East 5th Street. Visit tinyurl.com/59ve475e. Bush Family Home listed as Historic Site. The Bush Family Home is now a Texas History Commission State Historic Site, a press release stated Wednesday. Formerly known as the George W. Bush Childhood Home, the home opened as a museum back in 2006 after a ribbon cutting attended by former President George H.W. Bush and First Ladies Barbara Bush and Laura Bush. Built in 1940, the Bush Family Home is listed in the National Register of Historic Places as the residence of the political family that included two U.S. presidents, a first lady, vice president, second lady, and two state governors. The Bush Family Home was accepted as a Texas State Historic Site at the meeting of the THC on April 22nd of last year, making it the 36th state historic site in the agency's portfolio of key Texas historic sites, which includes the San Jacinto Battleground and the Monument of La Porte, the National Museum of the Pacific War in Fredericksburg, and the Port Isabel Lighthouse. The release also stated that the existing board of the Bush Family Home will transition to the newly created Bush Family Home Foundation with interim director Jacqueline Wolf named as the foundation's board director. The Bush Family Home State Historic Site is located at 1412 West Ohio Street in Midland. New hours for the home are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Thursday to Saturday and 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday. The home is open by appointment only on Tuesday and Wednesday and closed on Mondays. Landgraf to Chair Committee on Environmental Regulation. State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican, Odessa, has been selected the chair to lead the powerful Texas House Committee on Environmental Regulation. Chairman Landgraf was also reappointed to serve on four other pivotal House committees, a press release stated. I'm thankful to Senator Fallon for those appointments, and I am honored to serve as chair of the Environmental Regulation Committee, which is especially significant to West Texas, Landgraf said in the press release. I am thankful, Speaker Fallon, Fights for Permian Basin Energy, and The Best Interest of Texas. I'm excited to get to work and to deliver results for my fellow West Texans and our great Lone Star State this legislative session. Speaker Dade Phelan, Republican Beaumont, announced the chairmanship and committee assignments Wednesday afternoon. In addition to his chairmanship, Landgraf was appointed to serve on the Transportation Committee, Redistricting Committee, House Administration Committee, and the Select Committee on Youth, Health, and Safety. The House Committee on Environmental Regulation has jurisdiction over matters pertaining to air, land, and water pollution, industrial development, and environmental matters that are regulated by the Department of State Health Services, DSHS, or the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, TCEQ. This is a responsibility I do not take lightly, and I will take full advantage of the opportunity to continue ensuring Texas industry can thrive while maintaining a pristine environment for future generations of Texans, Landgraf said in the press release. I am laser-focused on fighting for the needs of my home region of the Permian Basin and our great state. My commitment to fulfill my sacred oath and represent my fellow West Texans is unwavering. I will relentlessly work and keep burning the candle at both ends to ensure the voices of West Texans are heard loud and clear in the halls of the Texas State Capitol. Earlier this year, it was announced that the Environmental Protection Agency planned to back off of its intent to indirectly restrict Texas oil and natural gas production through a non-attainment designation of portions of the Texas Permian Basin. The announcement came after Landgraf, as well as Speaker Phelan and Governor Greg Abbott, spent months calling for the EPA to reconsider, making special note that any dip in clean production in Texas would result in an increase in production in regions of the world that do not prioritize safety or the environment. Landgraf called the EPA's announcement a massive win for the Permian Basin, Texas, the United States, and anywhere else where people need energy and love freedom. Prior to Landgraf's election to the Texas House in 2014, the Odessa, Texas Department of Transportation District received around $50 million per year from the state for transportation projects. Since 2019, when Landgraf was appointed to the House Transportation Committee, the number has jumped to $360 million per year. Black History Month recognitions. The Odessa Police Department is recognizing the following officers during Black History Month. They are: Corporal Michael Hamilton has been with the Odessa Police Department for 8 years and is one of the community relation officers. He can be seen at many of the local community events. He's OPD's best dancer. Back in the day, he was on tour with T-Pain and danced for countless shows. He's been in various music videos for many multi-platinum artists, including T-Pain, Tech N9ne, Chris Brown, B2K, Omarion, and Ne-Yo. Hamilton also served for 6.5 years in the U.S. Army. He was on active duty for 5 years and in the National Guard for 1.5 years. He has multiple deployments to Iraq, Afghanistan, and Africa. His motto, each one, teach one. It takes a village. No matter who you are, you can teach good qualities and good lessons to each other. He says, we all have to watch out for each other. He's proud of the African-American culture and wants to serve as a good role model. Lieutenant Sherry Carruth is one of OPD's most senior officers. She's a wealth of information regarding the law enforcement world and is a valuable asset to OPD. She is a native West Texan born and raised in Midland, graduating from Midland Lee High School. Carruth began her career with OPD in August of 1992, graduating from the Permian Basin Law Enforcement Academy. During her tenure, she has served as a patrol officer, field training officer, hostage negotiator, sergeant with the Patrol Services Bureau, and public information officer with the Chief's Office. In October 2017, she was promoted to the rank of lieutenant and currently commands the Criminal Investigation Division. When it comes to the African-American culture, Lieutenant Carruth says, "I'm proud of family ties, upbringing, fellowship, and cooking, handed down by my great-grandparents and grandparents. I miss my grandmothers. They were literally the glue that held the families together." TxDOT seeks public input on widening of State Highway 302. The Odessa District of TxDOT will be conducting a second virtual public meeting on the widening of State Highway 302 from west of Mentone to United States 285 to east of No Trees on Farm to Market Road, 2019. The virtual meeting is scheduled to begin at noon Thursday. Following the virtual public meeting, the presentation will remain available for viewing through February 27th. The proposed project consists of widening State Highway 302 from a two-lane undivided highway to a four-lane divided highway with two travel lanes in each direction, a center median, inside and outside shoulders, median openings as needed. There are no proposed improvements within Mentone or Kermit. The proposed project would require additional right-of-way. The proposed project is anticipated to potentially displace approximately 8 non-residential structures. No residential structures are anticipated to be displaced. To access the virtual public meeting, go to www.txdot.gov and keyword search SH302 Virtual Public Meeting. The online meeting will open on today and remain available through Monday, February 27th. The meeting will consist of a virtual meeting room and will include both audio and visual components. The virtual public meeting webpage will feature maps and exhibits. The public can submit comments using any of the following methods: online comments form found at www.txdot.gov, keyword search SH302 Virtual Public Meeting, email at sh302@icf.com, mail comments form to Blanton and Associates, attention SH302 from US 285 to FM 2019, VPM number 2, 5 Lakeway, Center Court, Suite 200, Austin. 78734. Comments must be received or postmarked by February 27th to be included in the official record of this virtual public meeting. Local news roundup. Man killed Tuesday in Midland accident. A 51-year-old Cedar Creek man was struck and killed Tuesday morning by an unknown motorist in Midland. Midland officials received a call about an accident in the 1900 block of East Interstate 20 around 7:30 p.m. Tuesday night. When they arrived, they found a still-running Ford pickup truck parked off the roadway and its registered owner, Lazaro Villafuerte Resendez, suffering life-threatening injuries in the middle of the eastbound lanes of the North Service Road, says Carissa Danley, a City of Midland spokeswoman. Resendez was taken to Midland Memorial Hospital, where he was pronounced dead. Officers believe Resendez got out of his truck to retrieve a block of wood and was hit by an unidentified vehicle. They continue to investigate. Odessan accused in accident involving injury. An Odessa man accused of rear-ending a pickup truck with his mother's vehicle nearly a year ago was arrested on outstanding warrants Monday. According to Odessa Police Department reports, three warrants were issued for Mark Anthony Mendoza, 24, after he allegedly hit the back of a Chevrolet C1500 with his mother's Mitsubishi Outlander shortly after midnight last Valentine's Day. A 35-year-old passenger in the Chevy was taken to Medical Center Hospital with a head injury, and a witness reported seeing two people run away from the crash at Grandview Avenue and East 6th Street, the report stated. Mendoza was identified as the driver of the Mitsubishi by his older sister, who spotted him in the car moments before the crash. His driver's license was also found inside the car, the report stated. Police sought warrants for Mendoza for accident involving bodily injury, accident involving damage to vehicle, and possession of marijuana because 7.9 grams of the drug were found in the center console, according to the report. According to Ector County District Court records, Mendoza has an outstanding warrant at the time of the crash for failing to appear at his August 2021 arraignment hearing in a June 2020 evading arrest case. Mendoza was booked into the Ector County Jail on the four outstanding warrants Monday. He's being held without bond in the evading case and surety bonds totaling $37,000 in the February 14, 2022 crash case. Man arrested on outstanding warrants. An Odessa man accused of beating up his common-law wife while she was holding a baby back in October was arrested Monday on outstanding warrants issued in connection with the case. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a 25-year-old Esmond Drive resident called 911 around 10:30 p.m. October 12th to report Yorlinas Feliciano Rodriguez, 30, had assaulted her and threatened to kill her. An officer arrived. The woman told officers Rodriguez became upset when she confronted him about using drugs and punched her several times in the face and slapped her back, all while she was holding her baby boy, the report stated. She also told the officers when she said she was going to call police, Rodriguez grabbed his gun, told her he was going to kill her, and left, the report stated. An officer indicated in his report he saw the woman's left eye was red and swollen, and a handprint was outlined on her back. Warrants for aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and endangering a child were issued at that time. Rodriguez was booked into the Ector County Jail Monday, and he remains there on an immigration and customs enforcement hold and surety bonds totaling $50,000. Sheriff issues scam warning. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths would like to remind people to be mindful when answering phone calls from strangers. A woman recently received a voicemail message from someone claiming to be a lieutenant with the Ector County Sheriff's Office informing her he had some sensitive information for her, Griffiths said. However, the ECSO does not have a lieutenant with that name. If someone receives a call from someone they don't know, they shouldn't answer the phone, Griffiths said. However, should they answer the phone and are asked personal information, they should not provide it, Griffiths said. Instead, they should hang up and verify the person's identity and other information by making calls of their own. Sheriff's personnel would never leave a message like the one the woman received, Griffiths said. If his deputies or investigators can't reach someone on the phone, they'll go to that person's house in person. People worried about being scammed should invest in the RoboKiller app, which blocks callers who aren't listed in their contacts, Griffiths said.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.